This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
You bitch!
How bad it gets.
Sally, I think I'll buy the flowers myself.
But you're not a girl, you're a guy. And why would a guy want to marry a guy?
Don't stomp your little lassies of Prada, she's a me, honey.
John Callio, will you go around with me?
Don't fuck with me, fellas!
Oh, I feel so damn sick and dirty, I can't stand it anymore.
I wish I knew how to quit you.
Is butter a curve?
I had a hunch he might be a real romantic.
We were decoys. He used us as bait. We procured for him.
We could have had a good life together. Fucking real good life. But you ain't want it, Ennis. So what we got now is Brokeback Mountain.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening we are turning against the law as we look at films which explore how the law has been used to oppress and marginalise LGBT people.
Our guest is Fergus O'Brien, the director of Against the Law, which screens next month as part of the Queer Screen Film Fest. We speak with Fergus about his new film and the way it chronicles the kind of institutionalised disenfranchisement. You can tell he wrote this script.
You wouldn't happen to be reading a script there, would you, Jen?
Would I? We're oppressing things. Sounds like a weapon.
No, look, it's a great film, powerful film that kind of mixes documentary with narrative to tell the story of how the law oppressed the gay, particularly the gay community.
Gay male community.
In England prior to the change in law in 1967. So we'll be exploring that film and speaking with Fergus O'Brien, the director of Against the Law, which screens at the Queer Screen Film Fest next month. But we'll also be looking at some of the best queer films that document how the law has sought to marginalise LGBT people, films like Howl, the James Franco film that came out about 10 years ago that shows us the obscenity trials that tried to suppress Allen Ginsberg's poetry, and also films like Victim, of course, a seminal film that really kind of explores the oppression and marginalization of, again, gay men particularly.
And, you know, and that film is being credited to influencing the law reform.
We know how critical film can be in changing hearts and minds.
There you go. It's the power of film, power of the silver screen.
Power story.
And of course, we've got a double pass. We've got two double passes to give away to Sweet Country.
but we're giving these double passes away tonight in celebration of someone.
Not in celebration, but in we're quite sad that our newsreader, Matt, that was his last newsread for Joy. We just heard just a few minutes ago. So we're actually really sad to see Matt go.
It's just not going to be the same starting an Outtakes episode without having Matt usher us in with the news headline.
Keep us on time.
So in honour of that, we are going to give away these two double passes to Sweet Country. And we want you to message in and let us know who your favourite Hollywood Matt is.
Yeah.
Who your favourite Hollywood Matthew is. I've got a few. I can rattle them off the top of my head, but I won't tell you right now.
So we definitely want our members. So don't forget your membership number when you do message in so we can actually get the tickets to you to message into 0427-JOY-949 or email us at joy.com.au. And yes, like Alan said, who is your favourite Matt?
Hollywood Matt.
Say goodbye to Matt. I'm going to miss you, Matt. I know. This one's for you, Matt.
Yeah.
And then we can kill that song straight away.
We've turned it off already. Done? We're done. Okay, yeah, thanks, Celine.
Paying tribute to Matt.
Yeah. No. We want to know your favourite Hollywood Matt. Is it Matthew Bomer? Matthew McConaughey?
Is it Matthew Bomer? Or is it
Bomer?
Is it a particular person who played a doormat? I don't mind. We'll take anything. Any mats?
A doormat.
What, a magical carpet mat?
What about
mat?
A bath mat?
Yeah.
Bath mat?
Well,
might be.
Sorry.
Message in on 042.
Sending it to ridiculous. And you know why we're being so ridiculous.
The law.
Because you know what? The three of us have not been in the studio together for such a long time. It's almost like a reunion.
It is.
Having you sitting next to me, Gina. It's lovely.
Love it. Love it. Sorry, we will get back on track and charge you for 3 minutes intervals because we are talking about the law tonight.
Six minute billing.
Oh, I see.
Message in 0427JOY949. You can email us at onair@joy.org.au. Alan, you've already lost it.
Get us on track.
I'm just thinking about 6 minute billing minutes, you know, intervals, you know.
All right. So what we're doing is we're asking our listeners, message in, let us know your favorite Hollywood mat in commemoration of our lovely newsreader, Matt, who just did his last newsread for a Monday evening here at Joy. Let us know your favorite Hollywood mat on 0427JOY949 or email in at onair@joy.org.au. And you could go in the running to take home one of two double passes to see Sweet Country.
Amazing.
Courtesy of Transmission Films, yeah.
Thank you, to Transmission. So message in. As much as we'd like to talk about Matt for the full hour this evening.
We could.
And there are some stories we could share. No, we are talking about films that chronicle the relationship between LGBT people and the law. And I think it's going to be a really fascinating discussion. Mm-hmm. And I'm thrilled that we get to revisit our chat with Fergus O'Brien, the director of Against the Law, which screens as part of the Queer Screen Film Festival, as part of this kind of spotlight on films that chronicle changes in the law. Because this is a really heart-wrenching film, isn't it? I mean, the way documentary is used in this film to heighten the drama.
But that's the thing, you watch a film and you suspend disbelief. And even when you're watching something, when at the beginning it tells you, this is based on a true story, sometimes you do forget. And it's so many critical points in this film, and critical points of the story, we get to hear from real elders telling how it really happened as critical moments in the film take place. And you go, nah, that couldn't happen. Mm. Here are these men documenting this in their lives.
And it's a wonderful Goosebumps. Celebration of these men as well, like a really wonderful celebration of the importance of our elders, our community elders, so important. Mm. But we're going to come to that in due...
And their survival.
Yes,
I think really these are tales of survival that come out in this film.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, we're gonna really explore this film later in the program, but we're gonna start off with a segment that we haven't done in a while here on Outtakes, where we're running the Outtakes Weekly Outtakes, which is your one-stop shop for all Hollywood news that's related to kind of LGBT film. Mm-hmm. So counting down to the Outtakes Weekly Outtakes. And every time. You gotta wait till the music, till the crescendo kind of dies down, then we begin.
We always run out of time.
We do.
So this is dying down, Nathan.
Okay. And to Hollywood first, where the Academy has announced this year's crop of Oscar nominees. Amongst those vying for best feature film are queer favourites The Shape of Water, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, and Call Me By Your Name.
Dee Reese became the first African-American woman nominated in the Best Adapted Screenplay category for Mudbound, which also earned cinematographer, thank God, Rachel Morrison the distinction of being the first woman nominated for Best Cinematography.
Way to go.
And Yance Ford became the first trans director to receive an Academy Award nomination when he received a nod for Best Documentary Feature. Yay.
And one queer favourite that has continued to hold the spotlight is Luca Guadagnino's Call Me By Your Name. During a recent interview with The Hollywood Reporter, Guadagnino spoke about his plans for a sequel to the film. Said Guadagnino, "In my opinion, Call Me can be the first chapter of the chronicles of the life of these people that we met in this movie. If the first one is a story of coming of age and becoming a young man, maybe the next chapter will be, what is the position of this young man in the world? What does he want?"
I say, bring it on, I can't wait. Mm-hmm. And the Academy has also approved the next phase in its Standards of Conduct Initiative. In an email to the Academy members, CEO Dawn Hudson forwarded instructions on how individuals can report claims of workplace misconduct. "The Academy's goal is not to be an investigative body," she said, "but rather to ensure that when a grievance is made, it will go through a fair and methodical process to determine whether action regarding membership status should be taken."
Do you reckon?
Mm. Also this week, Minnie Mouse has received her own star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
About time.
Minnie Mouse, who was first animated in 1928, now joins a long list of fictional characters with their own Hollywood stars, including Shrek, Snow White, Tinkerbell, and of course Mickey Mouse, who received a star some 40 years ago. Talk about gender
disparity there.
And of course, still in Hollywood. Oh, but better news, Meryl Streep has joined the cast of Big Little Lies for season 2. Our lovely Meryl will play Mary Louise Wright, the mother of Alexandra Skarsgård. I can never say that right. Character who arrives in Monterey to tend to her grandchildren and search for answers. So it's the HBO miniseries which saw Nicole Kidman, oh, there you go, Alan, win about every award under the sun, which you love.
Uh-huh. Yeah, love it's fantastic. It's brilliant. And you know what? Daniel's wedding himself, that Meryl Streep is in this. In other casting news, RuPaul is set to fly the skies in Drag Queens on a Plane. The movie will be executive produced by RuPaul, along with Fenton Bailey, Randy Bobato, Tom Campbell, and the team behind RuPaul's Drag Race. Drag Queens on a Plane is set on a maiden voyage of Glamazonian Airways as Ru has packed the flight with drag's biggest names. I can't wait. Sounds fun.
Can you say that again?
Glamazonian. Mm-hmm.
And finally, casting has begun on Steven Spielberg's next Hollywood project, a remake of the Academy Award-winning classic West Side Story. Angels in America scribe Tony Kushner is set to pen the script.
Good stuff.
Good stuff. Good
stuff going on.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening we are turning our attention to films that take issue with the law and show us how the law has been used as a tool of oppression to marginalise LGBT people. So a heavy theme for this evening, but we are having this chat because a really great film, Against the Law, is screening as part of the Queer Screen Film Fest, and we were thrilled to sit down with the director of that film, Fergus O'Brien, earlier in the week, and we'll be airing our chat with Fergus later in the program. But to kind of temper the heaviness of this topic, we are also giving away two double passes to Warwick Thornton's new film, Sweet Country.
Mm.
And we've asked our listeners to message in on 0427JOY949 and let us know who your favourite Hollywood Matt or Matthew is, in honour of our newsreader, Matthew, who has done his last Joy newsread this evening.
And we've had a message in, guys, fellas, people.
Mm. Hey.
And from Peter. Peter tells us that he's always loved Matthew Modine. I totally agree with you. Matthew Modine, what a great actor. And for the life of me, I just can't remember some of the films that he's been in, but I do know Matthew, and his name, you sort of
full
rung
metal,
a bell.
Full Metal Jacket. Okay. There are so many Hollywood Matthews. Matthew Good from A Single Man, amongst many other really notable films. Matthew Broderick.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Ferris Bomer. Matthew McConaughey, if you...
But didn't Matthew Modine sort of star in... He played it like an evil scientist just recently in... Was it Stranger Things or one of those
things? Yes, it was. Yeah, it was Stranger Things.
He was in that. Yeah, I tell you what, he's got a fabulous head of hair. That's one thing about Matthew Modine. Great hair.
So we are giving you tips galore to win these tickets. Don't forget to message in with your member number on 0427JOY949. Say farewell to Matt by choosing your favourite Matt in Hollywood or in local cinema.
Now let's talk about this film, Against the Law, because I have to say I almost unexpectedly, I think, really enjoyed this film. And perhaps enjoy is not the right word, but what an experience. I think that this film is an experience, because the way that it blends documentary style interviews with these elders of our gay community, with the drama of Peter Wildblood, who was the only gay person to testify in the Wolfenden inquiry, which led to the Wolfenden Report, which was critical to the change of law in mid-century England. There's a mouthful.
I do have a point of order on that one because apparently he was the only gay man who had been convicted and who'd spent time in jail. There were two other gay men who gave evidence, but they had not been convicted.
But why would they do that if they risked 10 years imprisonment?
Well, I think the thing was that that was the problem. They absolutely struggled to find gay men. They don't, no mention of any gay, of lesbians.
Because the law
didn't exist, apparently.
They still don't exist if you look at Hollywood.
I was looking at some history, like quite seriously, we looked at a timeline of our own history and lesbians, of course, never get a mention in this space. I mean, even just looking at, you know, because we were looking at a British film, I was looking at some UK law. It wasn't until 1982. Did you know that women were not allowed to even spend their own money in a pub? They could have been refused service. It wasn't guaranteed, but it wasn't up until 1982 that you could turn a woman away and refuse a service in a pub.
You could refuse service until 1982.
Correct. With her own money to buy a drink.
Unbelievable. So she'd always, there would always have to be a man, ostensibly, to buy her a drink.
But, you know, here in Australia, we're all particularly well versed in how the law can be used as a tool of oppression because, of course, this was a discourse we were all part of last year. Mm. And as I said to Fergus, the director of this film, when I sat down with him, I feel like now is the right time for this film to be showing on our screens because this will resonate so much more now that we've all experienced, you know, firsthand through discussion after discussion after discussion, how important changing the law can be. Mm. And I think the film does a really, really excellent job of highlighting how the law is part of this institutional mechanism by which people can be isolated and discriminated against. And so many films show this, like A Single Man, for instance, which we just mentioned, deals with kind of isolation, victim.
There is actually one moment in a film, and I think all of us picked up on it. We were talking about it just before the show. Some of the interviews with elders in this, and one talked about even how they formed relationships and how the laws influence their relationships. I remember watching that part of the film going and sitting there self-reflecting of my relationships, of my friends' relationships. Alan, you had the same reaction to this exact same moment in the film where we actually sat back and go, oh, my God, have we allowed that to kind of colour how we see ourselves in this space?
Absolutely.
And do we still?
I think that this cultural norm that was developed as a result of this oppression has somehow carried on down through the generations. So this idea of not really forming or the inability to form lasting intimate relationships for fear of discovery and fear of being persecuted, gay men actually learnt to limit their intimate relationships with other men and for it to be casual and for it to be shallow. I wonder how much of that was a fascinating moment. What is the chicken and the egg? So this is something that was embedded as an absolute foundation part of the culture in those days, and somehow I believe some of that still carries
on. In hindsight, and this just really strikes me now, it's not something I thought about until actually we came on air, but I really feel like a brilliant companion piece to this film is A Single Man. And I know this is a film that we've looked at before, but A Single Man, I mean, the title tells you everything. This is a film about a single man, and it's about how difficult his life is because he physically lives apart from the community in this film. Mm-hmm. And we see his kind of isolation on so many levels throughout the film. But what this documentary/drama does is show us how the law can be imbricated in that singledom, in that isolation. And I think it's so fascinating in that respect and so important, especially now when we've just come through this discussion about the law and about how that affects our lives as LGBT peoples.
But it's also about the recent apologies we've had in our community. So Daniel Andrews in 2016, the formal apology from the state about the anti-gay laws we had here in Victoria was slowly starting to see these. So yes, marriage equality is one thing, but it's these apologies for laws that really harmed and oppressed people in the past. It's now that we need to be hearing these stories and seeing these films and capturing the stories of our elders.
And Gina, I cannot agree with you more because for me, I inherited the hard work that previous gay activists have made against changing these laws, and so of course I've taken it for granted.
Yeah,
and for me to actually see and hear these stories from our elders. Mm. I mean, it really drove home to me just how lucky we really are and just how painful and how difficult it was for them.
So living, against the law,
living under this, under this oppression.
Against the Law screens as part of the Queer Screen Film Festival next month in Sydney. And we had a chance to sit down with Fergus O'Brien, the director of this really important documentary and drama.
The opportunity to make the film arose because the BBC, they wanted to create a moment that would mark the 50th anniversary of the partial decriminalisation of homosexuality in England and Wales. I make that distinction because obviously homosexuality wasn't decriminalised in Scotland or Northern Ireland until substantially later. Mm. So there was a desire to mark that sort of seminal, that landmark moment.
So this was the moment in 1967.
Indeed, the beginning, I suppose, of the journey towards equality that we enjoy now, albeit a very sort of partial one at the time. Mm. But I guess it was the chink in the armor and the beginning of the opening of those doors and freedoms being extended to people in the way that they should. So that was a good starting point to remind people, I suppose, of how different things were. And I felt it was such a great opportunity to remind people of the things that were going on and that are still within the reach of living memory, really, and to have the opportunity to go out and speak to people who are still with us, who, you know, knew of very dark days and who could recollect with all the emotion and conflict and pain that they sort of recall when thinking back to those days. I think it's good to know our shared history. And
absolutely. I felt
that was a really important thing that the film could do. Probably over and above that, to remind people that, you know, it's great that we have these rights, but let's not forget that what has been given can be taken away. And so we have a duty, really, to be vigilant and to protect the rights that we have, because you don't have to look too far around the world to see how they can be eroded and are being eroded.
And I just feel like this is, that message is so critical, and it's the right time now for that message. I mean, it's always the right time, but now more than ever for that message to be on our screens here in Australia, where, as I was saying, we have just been through this really divisive and horrible public vote that did lead to a change in the law, but it was a reminder for all of us how important memory is, how important community is, and also how important a change in the law can be, even if it is only a partial change.
Exactly, and also as you all witnessed in Australia, to see how public opinion changes. And it was so affirming to see that the majority of people in Australia were behind what eventually became a change in the law. Mm. And I think it's great to have that barometer and for the law to kind of get up to date with where the majority are.
I love that you were able to capture this moment in history in such a fresh way by blending that documentary style with the narrative. I think was such a fresh but also such an affecting way to tell this story.
Well, I'm really, really pleased to hear you say that. I mean, it felt like a risky thing to do.
I bet.
You know, it's not done very often, and you know, to be honest, probably with good reason, because it doesn't often work in my view. But I suppose I felt in this case that if I thought about it deeply and thoroughly, that we could find a way to make it work, and in doing that, that we would sort of make the whole piece feel bigger, and that the real life testimonies, the documentary element in a way, could amplify the themes that are in the drama and remind people that you're not just watching a sort of a cozy kind of queer Downton Abbey, if you like, that happens sometime in the distant past. Yeah. That this is a true story, and actually the themes that are being explored in the drama are themes that have affected thousands of men, and that chorus of men that feature in the film serve that purpose to remind people that it wasn't just Peter Wildblood. You know, this was affecting thousands of men who were just trying to live their lives, trying to find love, and who for that human right.
And apart from all of that, the other thing I loved about the way that the story was told is that it felt like a celebration of these men as well. It felt like the film was paying homage to them and by showing their history, noting the importance of what they went through and the fight that they fought for us today. And, I mean, that was touching in itself.
I mean, they're such veterans and, you know, their stories are seldom told and it's such an important part of, clearly of LGBTI history, but, you know, I think of the, it's such an important element of the story of human rights. And so yes, to be able to hear those stories and absolutely, to have the opportunity to record them and have them now for posterity was just an incredible thing to do. I can't tell you what a joyful few days it was, you know, with that roster of fabulous men coming yes, into the studio, and we had such fun, and it was such an honor. I just wanted to see all, I just wanted the audience to share that and to see it all writ large on those amazing faces and to see it all etched in the character that you could see in those faces.
I'm so pleased to hear you say that it was a joyous experience filming that, because I have to say some of the stories that they had to share were quite confronting and shocking, even for people who are well versed in the history and who know it. The way the story was told, and I think here it was really heightened by the juxtaposition of the dramatic with the documentary, but some of those stories, not just the kinds of conversion therapy, for instance, which are chronicled by the film, but also the kind of institutionalized loneliness that the film explores, just such harrowing stories.
I agree completely, Daniel. I think, you know, in the beginning with some of them, there was some reticence, sort of, oh, I don't know. I suppose it's that sort of the residue of prejudice that, you know, to a degree sort of imprinted on some of those men. I mean, they had lived a large part of their lives sort of hiding. And so the idea of, you know, going on television to talk about it, you know, it took a lot of discussion and persuasion. And I think once those who decided to take part, once they did it, I think it was a real release. And also, it was a very proud moment for them to feel that those memories that they had carried for so long, you know, which had considerable weight for them,
yes,
were kind of seen as important. I think it was a very vindicating thing at the end of their lives.
You want to be cured?
Yes, sir.
Well, there are a number of options.
I understood that glandular injections or hormone treatment.
We've tried estrogen injections on a couple of cases here, but with no great degree of success. One man underwent physical changes of a somewhat alarming nature. We use aversion therapy.
How does that...
Electrical aversion. Electrodes fixed to the wrists, calves, feet. You'd be told to fantasize, watch pictures of men in various states of undress, receive shocks.
What does it leave? Marks?
They fade after a while. Or chemical aversion, apomorphine injections, produces nausea. You vomit, then you lie in it. No cleaning up allowed. Essential part of the therapy.
For how long?
2 days, sometimes three, depends.
Oh, I shouldn't be here. This shouldn't be happening to me.
You broke the law, Wildblood.
Then the law is wrong.
Well, that was a clip from Against the Law, the new film from Fergus O'Brien. And, gee, you get a sense of the kind of devastation devastating consequences that people face for simply being gay. And before that, of course, our chat with Fergus O'Brien, the director of this really important film that screens as part of the Queer Screen Film Festival in Sydney next month.
And that's the thing, when he sort of said, you know, these are stories, especially the doco parts and the people he got to interview, these are stories seldom told. We faced this very issue when we, was it last year when we look at the Seniors Festival and we could barely find a queer film with the story of our elders. It was really hard to come across a really good story.
Look, there's no doubt that there's something to be said for older people being invisible in Hollywood. And when you add to that the lens of queer film, they're even more invisible. We if we talk about representation, we have a real problem when it comes to representing our elders, and that is one of the reasons why this film is so A, important, but B, fascinating, because
it's like, awful that we're reacting because we're seeing voices we've not seen.
Not seen this on the screen before? I mean, that's what's like, isn't that shocking?
That was my thought exactly at the end of this, is how come I didn't know about this? How come I don't know? I'm so ignorant. And we talk about this, how we're so ignorant of our own history.
Well, there's ways of fixing that.
This helps overcome it, absolutely.
It does. And going on history walk tours with the Australian Gay and Lesbian Archives, they just had one. Do it every midsummer. Anyway.
I'd definitely like to do
free
that.
Free plug.
But Daniel, remember we did have a film with some of our gay elders, and that was looking at the survivors of the gay Holocaust after the Second World War.
Oh, paragraph 175.
Yes.
Yeah, again, a really important documentary. And
it reminds me of that one.
But should we only
ever
be...
There's so few and far between.
And that's the thing. We're only ever hearing them quite often tell the stories of surviving their oppression. We want to see their stories of them falling in love and just those happy romantic kind of stories. I mean, we're getting a glimpse. You know, Grace and Frankie is the opportunity of seeing an older gay male couple in love. I have found
the fourth season. Have you watched it?
Yeah, I'm starting.
I completed it in 2 days.
Oh, good.
And found it quite depressing, I have to say.
I've been a bit slow to get into the fourth season, and I love Grace and Frankie.
It's just, there's a lot about the troubles of growing older. Rather, it's not a celebration of growing older. It's a kind of wallowing.
It's a complaint list. A list of complaints.
We've been sidetracked. You sidetracked us. Yeah. The wonderful thing about this documentary is that we do get to see these people on film, and that they do relive for us some of their experiences.
Some of the couple of the men who we featured are very ill now, probably in their last days. One indeed has passed away already.
Dear, I'm sorry to hear that. I'm
very sorry to hear that. But actually, I'm also very happy that we had that moment. And they're very happy that they've had that moment. And as I say, that their testimony is there now.
And the other really compelling, I think, aspect of these stories was that a lot of them had a very confessional kind of dimension. And I think that was, again, a really interesting juxtaposition to the narrative that the film was dramatizing, because it showed that they weren't perfect, the people that you were interviewing. And likewise, I think Peter Wildblood, who the film uses as this kind of example of these stories, he was not perfect either. Some of the things that, some of his views that was represented in the film were, I'm sure to modern audiences, deeply controversial.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. And in a way, it's what really drew me to his story. Because, you know, let's face it, you know, who is perfect? And, you know, I haven't met anyone. And I think sometimes, all too often, cinema kind of sands down all the kind of rough edges, and we're presented with some sort of shiny hero or heroine. That isn't really what things were like in life. You know, life is messy. And the choices we make are not always good ones, and how those decisions are informed are often sort of coming from an odd place. I think in the case of Peter Wildblood, you know, he, in my mind, was a victim as well as a hero. He was a victim of oppression, and I think that prejudice that was so sort of with a lot of men, I think it sort of closes in, it turns in. And I think a lot of men at that time sort of turned that prejudice that they felt on a daily basis in on themselves. And sort of, the, I suppose, what we would call a kind of an inverted homophobia took root in some people to some degree, and that's certainly what happened with Peter. I think also because Peter Wildblood was a very intelligent man, a very analytical man, I mean, his mind was such that he needed to make sense of things in order for him to find peace and for him to be able to understand and process things. And so he sort of stratified, I suppose, the different types of homosexuals and, you know, into those that are acceptable and those that are not acceptable. And, yeah, I think you're right. That is kind of a controversial thing, and I think it's a shocking thing for us to hear. But let's not forget, and this is another very important and pleasing aspect of being able to make this film from my point of view, Daniel, is I don't think that that sort of prejudice has gone away. I mean, one doesn't have to look too far nowadays on social media with all these apps people have for wanting to meet each other,
yes,
and saying, you know, don't get in touch if you're femme, don't get in touch if you're fat, don't get in touch if you're Asian. What is that about? Why are we still sort of looking for the weaker link, somebody who we're better than? It still exists, and I think it's an important time to let people reflect on that. We should be better.
I could not agree with you more. And again, I think this draws us back to, I mean, there's so much in this film, isn't there, that is just so timely. And the messages that the film has, and there are a number of them, I think resonate, because while part of the film is so shocking because, and we think we've come so far, I mean, the kind of techniques of conversion therapy that we used and are still used in countries around the world, but we think we've progressed. But then, as you rightly point out, so many of the attitudes which we look at in this film and think, well, that's a long time ago, people have moved on, they're still here today, just, you know, in a different guise.
Exactly. And, you know, it wasn't too many years before I made Against the Law that I made a documentary series with Stephen Fry, where we travelled around the world and to explore the impact of homophobia in different parts of the world. And so we travelled to Russia, we travelled to South America, we travelled to America, India.
This is out there?
Out there, exactly,
yeah.
Yes. And, you know, all of these things are still happening in different parts of the world. And, you know, I think even in our own, you know, civilized societies, they still lurk,
yes,
in corners. So that's why we have to be vigilant, and we have to, you know, as a community, we have to stay together. Persecution and oppression is divisive, and it's about breaking people up, and it's about turning people against each other. And we need to learn from our history, I think, without sounding too preachy, I hope, that really the best thing we can do is to embrace each other, because together we're stronger.
Our chat there with Fergus O'Brien, the director of Against the Law, and it really is, I think it's a really critical film. I was debating, like, will we call it a must-see film?
It's a must-see. I think everyone in our community must see this film without a doubt. I highly, highly rate it. Yeah. 5 out of 5. And I think, you know, this film really is commemorating the fact that 50 years ago, homosexuality was decriminalised in the UK. And in fact, that was really came about due to the Wolfenden Report.
Which the film chronicles. So it touches on.
And I think the outcomes, the recommendations from the Wolfenden Report were that homosexual behaviour between consenting adults in private should no longer be a criminal offence, and that homosexuality cannot legitimately be regarded as a disease because in many cases it is only a symptom and is compatible with full mental health in other respects.
I know, but still
they moved away from mental health, which I thought
Change is slow.
Yeah.
And basically it said that it is not, in our view, the function of law to intervene in the private lives of citizens or to seek to enforce any particular pattern of behaviour.
A really important notion.
Mm, yeah.
So we are exploring this evening how films grapple with these points in our history. And we're going to be looking at some other really fantastic queer fare, which deals with exactly these issues. Right after this, you're listening to Outtakes on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
You are listening to Outtakes, the home of queer cinema on Joy 94.9, where this evening we're turning against the law as we look at films which explore how the law has been used to oppress and to marginalize LGBT people.
And we're asking our listeners to message in and tell us who their favorite Hollywood Matt is.
In honor of our newsreader,
Matt,
who's done his last newsread this evening.
Oh, that's so sad. And you can go in the running to win a double pass to Sweet Country, courtesy of Transmission Films. Now, we've actually heard in from Owen, and Owen says his favorite Matt is Matt Smith, who is also one of my favorite Matts and also one of my favorite Doctor Who. So well done, Owen. Thumbs up.
And the lovely Greta from 21st Century, who you'll hear later tonight, popped her head in to tell us her favourite Matt is Matthew McConaughey. And apparently she likes to have McConathons. How to lose a Matt in 10 days, maybe.
Sounds like a night I'd rather miss out on.
Oh, that is a little bit charming. I'm getting the nod. There you go. Thank you, Greta.
What's the one where he marries the wedding planner? Is it called The Wedding Planner?
Quite possibly. They're highly original, really hard
rom-com scripts.
The one with Jennifer Lopez. That's a great one.
It is The Wedding Planner.
That's The Wedding Planner. There you go.
The number is 0427JOY949. That's 0427569949. Or you can email in at onair@joy.org.au. Let us know who your favourite Hollywood Matt or Matthew is, and you two could go in the running to take away one of these double passes that we have to Sweet Country, thanks to our friends at Transmission Films.
Now, we are looking at films that look at the law, but one that's, I've been actually really waiting for this short film to come out, and it's another film that's playing at Queer Screen as part of the Short Film Festival, and I think part of the My Queer Career Festival. Now, some of us might remember, I remember this event very clearly in our history, 1994, Tasty Raid. I remember it because I should have been there that night and didn't end up there that night. Mm-hmm. And I'm so thankful I wasn't there that night.
Is that a nightclub?
A Melbourne nightclub where the police basically strip searched all of the patrons. Mm-hmm. And again, where we talk about lesbians being invisible, it got delayed because they needed to wait for women officers to then come and strip search the women.
Well, that was at least considerate.
We're on the premises. And it's something that has stayed with me, when you things kind of happen around you. And I, again, very grateful. I was one of the fortunate ones that didn't make it there on the night, but there was so many people that have been traumatized from that. So this short film I know has been in progress for a little while, and it will be showing at Queer Screen, looking at the Tasty Raid. And we know the ABC soon will be showing for Mardi Gras, the story of the 78ers that is coming out.
So some really great Australian fare to
looking
look
at some of our
to.
Really tragic history of our community here in Australia and how the law has been against us.
Been against us. But I think what's encouraging, what's hopeful, what comes out of this is how when these laws change, the dramatic impact that it has on our lives and the positive impact. So,
And the great thing is there have been some really excellent films to deal with this interrelation between the way we perceive ourselves and the law, and to do so in relation to queer lives. There are so many films that so perfectly pair with a film like Against the Law. Films like The Trial of Oscar Wilde. Mm-hmm. Films like Victim. And then, across the seas, films like Howl, the James Franco film, which chronicles the obscenity trials which Allen Ginsberg's poetry was subject to. And that film, for me, just kind of opened my mind to a whole new way of seeing the world, I think.
From the movie Howl?
Yeah.
I haven't actually seen it, Daniel.
It's a James Franco thing that puts me off. I'm so sorry to say that.
It's made by the producers of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Oh, wow.
And The Life and Times of Harvey Milk. So you know you're in good hands. Mm. And the stellar cast, James Franco to one side. We have people like Aaron Tveit, John Hamm, Mary Louise Parker, Jeff Daniels. It is a good cast.
Yeah, very good.
And the film kind of divides itself between the obscenity trial, mm-hmm. and how the poetry of Allen Ginsberg, this seminal poem, is it obscene? Because it is very crass in some of its language. Mm. There's talk of all kinds of things, but it's deeply metaphoric as well, in a in an almost Whitman kind of way. And then,
so when was this poem written?
In the early '50s.
In the '50s. So it was published in the '50s.
Correct.
Of course.
And it was the publisher who was taken to court.
Right.
And then we also get these wonderful animated sequences of the poem.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.